Wingtip.
Good afternoon. It is April 22nd, 2024. You're listening to A Little Column A, Little Column B, hosted by Will Nemanos and co-hosted by Zach Bishop. How are you doing today, buddy?
What is going on, Will? I am back from Europe, and let me tell you, the time change is terrible for watching basketball. It is a 6 hour ahead time difference between Poland and the East Coast. So that means a 7 o'clock game that will tip off at a terrible time of 1 a.m. So I was able to catch the very end of some of the play-in games. I was actually able to catch some of the second halves, just because if you've ever been international traveling, your sleep schedule gets thrown all out of whack. So now I'm back. I got back on Saturday, so I was traveling a little bit during the games. But as far as I can tell, it is blowout city. The one game, or I should say the second game. No, I'm going to put it back. I think the top game that I thought was going to be a blowout was going to be the Pelicans going against OKC. I thought OKC, they wanted to let everybody know, hey, we're for real. Everyone thinks we're young. The Pelicans don't have Zion. That turned out to be the closest game. And when I tell you I tried to hold on, I tried to hold on. I saw the Chet block. Then there was a call. It went to commercial. I heard the commercial, and then I fell asleep. I tried. I held on to that rope for as long as I could. And then I had to find out in the morning that CJ McCollum wasn't able to push them over the top.
A lot of games happened, and yet I don't know how much of any of them really matter. It seems like we have, 80-plus games of analysis on all of these teams. We had a play-in tournament we can touch a little bit on. And then we have the first round of the playoffs, the very first game. And it's like, if you form an opinion and really want to judge every one of these teams, by all means, go for it. But I think by game two, you're going to have a completely different opinion and a completely different team is going to show up. Or at least so I'm hoping, because I was under the impression that there was a lot of good teams in the NBA, and this past weekend was not a reminder of that. It's like, wait a minute, so we got rid of all the bad teams that can go play for the draft lottery, and these are all the good ones. These are all the ones that are over 500 and are really aiming for a championship. The amount of mistakes and turnovers and
We even had extra games for the teams that might have been close to find out, hey, are you maybe good or are you definitely bad, to make sure. These are supposed to be all of the good teams, and a good chunk of these didn't even score 100 points.
The first quarters were slow. It was like, hey, is anyone awake over here? This is, I know it's best of seven, but you got to kind of care about this game a little bit. You don't have 82 games to just come back and go and cruise control. I think some teams were a little shocked by the increase of the physicality. I think post All-Star break, we were touched on like how the officiating's been changed and teams have been getting a little bit more aggressive. I also think of the regular season that teams are rewarded for trying and that their effort really counts in the regular season. And the second the playoffs start, it's like, well, wait a minute. Everybody's trying now, and this isn't our advantage anymore. Like we were the team that tried, and now that everyone else is trying, we're really not even that good anymore. That was a huge wake-up call for, I think, a lot of teams. It was once the real defense turned on, everybody panicked. There was some miserable shooting all weekend and some really spectacular shooting. I mean, Boston was great, but bad offense. I don't know where to point the finger of the worst of them all, but I mean, Indiana should just burn the film on that tape. That was not a pretty team. That looked like, what is the advantage of Indiana? What are they good at? Are they good at offense? Because we know they're bad at defense. And that was evident, but I thought they would at least score. If they're not going to score and they're not going to play defense, what are they? What is that team? Haliburton? What is this?
I was shocked where the Pacers, I mean, they started off so hot. They were the East representative in the basketball tournament earlier, and they were scoring a ton of points. And it was kind of a joke. Like, they're going to score a bunch of points. They're not going to guard anybody, but they were scoring so much that they were a real threat, and they've kind of fallen off, but I still thought they still pack like an offensive punch that you have to look out for. But they didn't score 100 points, and I think it was just doubly down, and I don't want to bleed over to another game too fast, but that a team with Luka and Kyrie Irving also wouldn't crack 100 points. And both those teams, both their first halves were awful. They combined for 72 points in a half. I mean, it's not unusual for one team to score 72 points and a half. I mean, maybe not in the, quite in the playoffs, but if you saw that happen, it wouldn't be enough for me to reach out to people and say, hey, you seen this game, 72 points? Like, oh no, a little bit higher scoring, but okay, that's just what happens. But to your point that the playoffs are rougher, is this a surprise? I could see a team maybe like Orlando, or maybe I'll give OKC the benefit of the doubt to be surprised by it. But the All-Star break was a while ago. It's already been rougher, and I mean you've listened to hundreds, maybe thousands of these interviews. Playoffs are different. Oh, everyone brings their energy. You don't get the calls you get in the regular season. How is this a surprise to these teams? And a lot of these teams are veteran teams. The Suns, Kevin Durant, joked about Bradley Beal not being in a lot of playoff games, but he's been in playoff games before. He should understand.
They were slow as well. For a team that's supposed to be loaded with offense and players that are supposed to be able to put the ball on the hoop, and three guys, they were all healthy. They all played together. Nurkic is even healthy. I mean, we've been saying that all year. They got a weak link at center. Nurkic is going to be able to hold up and do all of this. Well, he's here. We're in the playoffs. He's still playing. Played plenty of minutes. I wouldn't put all of the blame on him. I would put the blame on the scores. The thing that has been advertised that you're supposed to be good at, similar to Indiana, they weren't good at. And perhaps they're able to correct that. But
because there was a little bit of a, it wasn't a joke exactly, but the contrasting stats where in the last 10 days the Celtics are playing one game because just the way the schedule worked out, we were the one seed, and the Heat in the past 10 games or 10 days had to play five games, and the play-in teams have to play a little more, but a lot of these teams, they've been resting for a week, so usually the games right at the start of the season, right after the All-Star break, are normally much more competitive, much more like, I don't think it wasn't like these were just blowouts because one team was a lot better. I think it was just blowouts, and like you said, there was panic, there was poor execution. It just didn't look like good basketball. It looked like teams playing a third game in four nights or something like that.
I think there's been a little bit of some imposter syndrome already happening. Let's talk about, there was a handful of good games. There's not really a good order to go in at all, and we could talk about all of the injuries, and it's fine. I think one of the more challenging matchups was trying to figure out, is Cleveland the tough guy or is Orlando the tough guy? And they both have youth. They both have young talent. They both had a ton of draft picks. Both had, I'd say, a semi-successful year, being the 4-5 seed. This was a mess for Orlando. They couldn't shoot, and the crazy part is that Cleveland was just begging them to, leaving them open in corners, just saying, go ahead, try us. I don't think I've seen, a Rondo approach of begging someone else to shoot in the playoffs. For a team like this, it's going to mess with them. I don't know if they're going to bounce back from it all, and I think on a microcosm, this team is still very successful, but I wish they had maybe invested a little bit more into this year right now, trying to get at least one more veteran or one more experienced guy who can just score or just run an offense. I mean, there wasn't any good guard play in this game. I thought Orlando looked really scared, and I thought Donovan Mitchell did a couple heat checks and definitely looked like a superior player at all. But overall, the fact that Cleveland was able to bully Orlando around after what happened to Cleveland last year, it's just that Orlando had it coming. What are you buying into all this? Do you think that this is going to flip-flop at some point, or is this kind of where we're going for this series? Like, just that extra experience for Cleveland, just not having it for Orlando? I mean, what went wrong here, and what can we fix?
I don't think Orlando needs to panic. I think that Cleveland was the favorite coming into this series. I think they're still the favorite, but I think this has much more to do with Cleveland than it does with Orlando. Where Cleveland last year, the Knicks came in and both teams were supposed to be tough guys, and the Knicks showed up and said, we're the real tough guys, get out of here. And there was a lot of talk afterwards. Jared Allen said, hey, we weren't prepared for the bright lights. And I think that they wanted to make sure to show their fans and to show themselves, last year was the fluke. We are tough guys. We are good at basketball. We do pride ourselves on defense. And I think Orlando is almost in a similar spot to where Cleveland was last year. A lot of young guys, not a lot of playoff experience, and you know, you're playing on the road, and it's just, it was bad. It was rough. You can't be scoring mid-90s average points in this day and age.
No, they looked really shy and just a little over-intimidated. A fun little side fact on this. I don't think you've watched this game live. This was the first game Saturday. So after the play-in games, this is the first game to kick everything off. It's Saturday afternoon. I think it's like 1 o'clock, I want to say, on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
The game tips off, and it's an immediate technical difficulty with the audio. We have no broadcast sound. We're just live audio of the game.
Oh, no. Was it ESPN or TNT?
I want to say it was ESPN, but I thought this was one of the best playoff elements I've ever seen. Like, just removing them, and it's like all you hear is the crowd noise, and you're hearing it at full volume without any other distractions, and it's the start of a Cleveland playoff game, which, you know, Cleveland, Mr. LeBron's been here. You know, they have some playoff experience. These fans know how to show up, and they certainly did, but I really enjoyed the experience. The second the broadcast came back on, it felt like I went from being at the game to suddenly watching the game. It was weird. It was probably 4 minutes of game time. It lasted longer than it seemed, but I really liked it. I don't know if that's an option. Is that something you would ever think you'd be interested in, if they could just mute? Like, you still want the game volume, though. Like, you're still getting the crowd. You're still getting all of that, and you're just turning down the announcers. Just put them on mute. I forget who they were, but they handled it all really well, and it's just that it was right off the get-go. First game, right off the start, you know, everyone is, like, panicked immediately. Like, what do you mean we don't have audio? We have, like, 5 other games that scheduled after this, and we're kicking the first one off like this? I very much enjoyed it, so I'm sure someone's job might have been cost, but I enjoyed the lack of audio from the announcers, and it would be an interesting feature going forward. It didn't happen again. I don't know if you saw anything on Twitter about it, but you can find the clips online, I'm sure. It was electric arena, though. It's playoff atmosphere. Huge crowds. And I thought a lot of the crowds really showed up this weekend. New York was probably one of the better games and probably one of the best crowds of the weekend. I think it helps that
all the home crowd, all the home teams won. So I think it was a little bit of, you know, chicken or the egg. It's a lot easier to cheer for your team when you win. And I saw, I think it was Kirk Goldsberry, and I was looking at it this morning, but he had tweeted it, and it was during, I think it was during the first night game last night, saying the entire playoffs, we'd only gotten one lead change. So, like, all these home teams jumped out to a lead and just were riding it out. So all the home fans were having fun this weekend.
Well,
except for maybe OKC.
Maybe. Stressful night.
Mm-hmm.
Philly, New York. I think we had this matchup circled. These teams easily could have swapped their seeds at a 2-7. It could have ended in a variety of different ways. I think the big story here is a whole bunch of lucky threes by New York is what I'm categorizing it as. And a Joel Embiid who's still testing a leg that
I don't even
know if he can stand on. I don't know if you saw the play. Just to quickly describe it to you, there's a Embiid post-up at the high post, of which he pump fakes and then does, like, Tracy McGrady T-Mac off the backboard self-pass alley-oop. And he successfully does it. He dunks on, like, the entire Knicks team. And the second he lands, his knee just, I don't know what it does, but you could see it in his face that something went wrong and that wasn't right. And it seemed like he was being very leisure on it, not really putting a whole lot of pressure on it, not being the quickest guy on the floor, but still playing, which is an impressive comeback. I didn't think we were going to see him again. I don't know how you could expect him to be here for the entire series. And I don't think that even if he does show up out there, it's going to be nearly enough. But again, what went wrong here, and what do you think can be fixed? Like, can we fix Embiid? Is that end-all, be-all? Is there any hope for them without it?
Your tune has changed very quickly. I don't even know if it was a full 2 weeks ago or only 1 week ago that you were saying the Celtics should be concerned because Embiid was coming back. And I said, I'm not concerned about the Sixers. I'm not concerned about Embiid because, like, the Sixers are lucky just to have him back at all. Like, even if it's the 60%, 80%, but to that play, I was watching, I saw the, you know, the alley-oop. I saw the replay to himself dunking it, and I texted you, but it was kind of an in-between text where it was something like, oh, man, and I was talking about the dunk. I walked away, and then I come back, and then I look, and yeah, he hurt himself, and it sure looked like, uh-oh. You know, it was, it wasn't non-contact, but it wasn't like he landed on somebody's foot. It didn't look like a bad injury. So usually when that happens, that usually means it's pretty bad. So I was surprised he came back. But when they came out in the third quarter, the Sixers really, they made it interesting. So I don't think that this series is over. I think this one's gonna go to the distance. All I think right. We have to remember that we get caught up where, especially game one, it's at home. It's the higher seed. They're supposed to win. They're supposed to win the first two games. So even going down 2-0 is not a, this is all the way over. And I think this one's going to get a little more interesting.
I just worry that it does seem like this will be a longer series. And I don't see how that benefits Philly. I know that's what they're supposed to do, being the quote-unquote underdog of this series. Just, you know, just stay in the game, just survive to make play another one. There's no way Embiid's going to hold up. And if he does hold up for seven, I'm not buying him in the next round. And that's a problem for Philly, is that I don't think they have quite the ceiling that they were hoping to have, even with Embiid back. I also, have you seen Buddy Hield? Can we find him? Is he active? I mean, what happened to that disaster? He played 12 minutes. I don't think he took one shot.
I got the box score pulled up. He took two shots. He took 1-3. He only played 11 minutes, so that's not very long. It's pretty much the starters played the entire game. But if Buddy's out there, that's kind of it. I shouldn't say it's his whole thing, but when they traded for him, my whole thought was, oh, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be similar to J.J. Redick helping to space the floor for Embiid. It's going to be way harder to double him. So if he's not out there putting up threes, spacing the floor, that is not a good sign for them.
I thought we would have had the problem where we got to talk to Buddy and be like, hey, man, you don't get to shoot every time. I never thought we'd have to have the conversation of like, hey, man, you're a shooter. You're a scorer. Like, do you need encouragement? You can shoot. Like, nobody's telling you you can't. Or if they are, I think they got to slow down on whatever they're asking him to do, because if he's going to be out there and not shoot, there's not a whole lot of advantages to him being out there. And I don't understand why they made the deal earlier in the year. And perhaps I've just been undersold on what that could be, and you know, playoffs are hard for people. It's a different animal, and maybe there's more to that. Anything for the Knicks? Go ahead. Sorry.
I think that if you're the and I'll just kind of wrap this all into it for you is if the Sixers are looking for a bright spot, it's that you're on the road, that MSG crowd, just electric. Very excited. They're very excited again to be in the playoffs, and they're letting everybody know it. But this game down the stretch was close. A little better execution, a few stops here or there. And on the Knicks side, Deuce McBride had 21 points. Josh Hart went 4-for-8 from three. These are a couple of the role players on the Knicks that, you know, that's usually the narrative. The role players play better at home. So if these guys aren't showing up, there's nobody past that on the Knicks. Like, the Precious Achiuwa, maybe. It's like after these eight guys, they've had injuries. If anybody goes down again, if Mitchell Robinson can't hold up, they're going to be super thin.
It could be a bit of a false prophet where, I mean, I don't know this for sure. I heard this on a podcast. I don't think this is an actual statistic, but they were joking how this is probably the most bench points Thibodeau's ever had off a team, because he always plays the starters 40 minutes a game. There's never, ever been bench scoring like this when he played 10 minutes and that's it. Unusual for sure. Something you can count on. I don't know. You know, there have been moments where the Knicks have been really hot from three. I mean, Vincenzo didn't have a perfect game, but he's heating up a couple games. He's had some 30-point games, and I think if there's just enough of a rotation of guys that can do the threes, like Hart and Deuce did this past game, that they're going to be a little bit more to reckon with. I'm not worried about Jalen Brunson. I thought Philly did a really interesting job on him, kind of putting him in traps, really making him uncomfortable. I thought making him play defense was something that a lot of teams did well, and attacking the number one scorer on the other team and just putting him in pick and rolls. But I'm not worried about the Knicks. I I am worried about Philly because in a game where, you know, Embiid's doing everything he can and Buddy Hield plays 11 minutes and only takes one shot, I don't think he's in the right mind frame for what they need out of this. And if he's not one of them, I don't know how everyone else is going to step up either. I don't see it for Philly. I'm worried about Embiid. I picked them in this series too. I think if Embiid's healthy, Philly's fully capable of winning this series. But from what I just saw, I just think there's too much Knicks. I think they have a little bit more depth of some wild card shooters that seem to be in a little bit more rhythm. When this game goes to Philly, though, I want to see – let's see Deuce shoot then, right? Like maybe that's a bit of a shift.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I mean.
All right, next game here. Let's do Denver-LA. Jokic versus Anthony Davis with that old man LeBron on the team. This was a tight game. Denver doing Denver things. I don't know if we need to reiterate all of that. I think what I took the most out of this game was just the duel between Jokic and Anthony Davis, and that they got a really good Davis game. And Davis was good defensively. He was good scoring. It seemed real balanced. A bit of a strange LeBron game, but if Jokic and AD are going to go at this, I think this is going to be an awesome series. I was very entertained by it. I don't think you're really going to see two quality players like this in a first-round matchup often. So I got a kick out of this. I don't know how realistic the Lakers' chances are, but if AD is going to be like that, they're going to hang around. And if you just hang around long enough, perhaps a couple of Russell threes will just swing your way, and that might just be enough. Am I crazy for thinking that, or is Denver just more superior?
Denver is just way more superior. They've beaten the Lakers 9 times in a row. The Lakers haven't beat them since, I think it's 2022, and it's not like Denver's getting older. The Lakers are getting older. LeBron's getting older. This was the late game on Saturday. I don't think I've ever been more tired in my entire life, and you were telling me, go to sleep, catch up on your rest, get ready for the podcast, and I said, no. I made sure I did not fall asleep until I was confident that the Lakers were going to lose. That's how committed I was. That kept me, you know, kept me awake. But I just don't see. I don't see what mix the Lakers can put together. I saw Darvin Ham came out and said that they've got some tricks up their sleeve for what they're going to do with Jokic, and I just don't think that's how that works. They just don't. They don't have the weapons.
Well, also, isn't it kind of naive to one not implement it in one game and be like, well, you know, we would have won, but we didn't do blank, and then to say, well, don't worry, it's coming next game, maybe. It's like, well, what are we saving it for? Like, all right, maybe next year, you know, we'll be better too. It's like, what are we threatening with here? It's a bizarre mind game that they're not winning right now. It's just the LA media, I think, constantly being in their ears about everything. And Denver really having a lot of fun with the LA media, I think, regularly. And that is a trend I'm enjoying. And hopefully we get a little bit more of these games. I thought AD had a really good season, played in a lot of games this year. I thought he looked really good. And I give him a chance.
I think that part is good for Davis. But I think that it's a real problem that the Lakers, LeBron and AD, were healthy this year. And they're going against Denver. And I think it's going to be a quick exit like it was last year. And I think after last year it was, oh, well, next year when we're healthy, we'll be a better seed. We're going to be a better team. And that did not play out. And LeBron is still amazing for what he's doing at his age. But it's on the decline. And I'm not saying next year he's not going to be able to, you know, start. But at a max, you know, a max salary guy, it's just he's not able to just be the absolute elite, no questions asked. He shouldn't have to.
It is funny, though, that every, like, once a week, one of the guys they signed over the offseason will do one good thing. And be like, oh, yeah, you know, we brought in Gabe Vincent. Like, this is what we needed. And he played, like, one game, fell on the floor, and then he was like, wait a minute, I shouldn't be playing. Like, I'm not ready to play at all. There's other additions. I don't know what happened to Reeves this game. He seemed a little lost. Russell, I could criticize and analyze as much as you want, but at the end of the day, he's going to make some shots. He's going to miss a lot, and you just got to hope that the day he makes it all, you're able to counter it in some way, because you can't predict that. I don't know how you count on it. I see how frustrating it must be to play with, where there's a very high ceiling and a very low floor, and you don't know which one you're getting. All right, what do we want to do? Did Anthony Edwards have the best weekend? Was he the star? Who was the best player this weekend? Was it Jokic?
I think he definitely had the most viral video.
Is just the trash talking?
Yeah. Yeah, because it was perfect that they had the video of him trash talking where you could only see him and you could tell it was Durant, but you didn't know what his reaction was. But then they also had a camera and they lined it up perfectly where then you could see the other side and you could see Durant. And when I saw Ant slapping his chest, you could definitely tell he was jawing away. I was really interested to see what Durant's reaction was going to be. Because yeah, we'll get to it later, but these guys are going to be teammates this summer for a very important mission. And I was happy to see Durant smiling and like taking it in stride and just like, hey, this is like a young up and comer. And yeah, it wasn't like Anthony Edwards, you know, was saying a bunch of personal things. Well, I just imagine that he wasn't. It was just all basketball and just, I am awesome right now. Like, you can't stop me. And Durant just knowing, like, I've been in that zone before. I've been that young dude. And just not getting upset about it. Just rolling with the punches.
It was fun. It was fun. It was energetic. It was, I mean, the other thing is he wasn't just celebrating off of just, you know, beating this team. He made some plays. He took some threes. He made a bunch of shots. It's what they needed to. They were dying for somebody to kind of take over that game. It was right there. A lot of that score kind of doesn't reflect as close as I think it actually was. But, you know, at the end of the day, when Phoenix only gets 95 points, Ant can do whatever he wants. If Phoenix is only going to score 95 points, he doesn't even need to have that great of a game. They should be able to break 100.
I mean, they created a big three, and They got beat pretty good.
Are we feeling pretty confident in Minnesota now, or do you think this would be a bit of a false game one as well?
No, I think this one's going to go deep as well. I don't think that the Timberwolves are going to just run them off the court. They got a lot of young guys. I think it's easier playing at home, and I think that it's like, I don't really think that there are these like magical changes that you're able to do. I think some of it is just three-point variance, and some of it is just knowing what like the game plan is, and it's not necessarily changing it. And I think that the Suns have enough veteran guys. You know, Durant's been on a lot of runs. Booker's been on, you know, on the runs. Grayson Allen was playing with the Bucks before this, so he's been on playoff teams. And I think that they will just be able to just kind of lock in, especially when they go home. So I could easily see them going down 0-2, but I could easily see it going back to Minnesota for game five all tied up.
I'm going to admit.
Did you see IT got a little bit of playing time because it was a blowout?
I did. We could talk that, and there's not really much there. That's not – I mean, it's great that he's on a team. I'm so happy for him. I wish him nothing but the best, but – you know, if he's playing, things aren't exactly going well.
No, there's nothing there. It was blowout. He didn't score, but he's in the box score, and he wasn't on a team until what, 3 weeks ago? Not even a month ago. So better than nothing. And I just want to point that out.
I want to be honest about my Grayson Allen opinion. It's a roller coaster. It's up. It's down. It's dirty player, it's bad contract, it's trade him away, it's I'll drive him to the airport, it's, oh my God, he never misses any threes, and then they gave him the contract, and now every time he misses, I'm like, well, that wasn't worth it. It's completely flipped. Like, before, it was the greatest deal ever. It was like, this guy's shooting like 50% from three all year, you're not paying him anything, you know, I can't believe Milwaukee gave him up, and now that they're paying him money, they kind of have him blocked up. Every time he misses, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they gave him all that money. It's fine. It's just an interesting scenario of watching his journey as he improves, really, is the reality. His expectations have just grown with me. I don't think I didn't think he'd really ever be this.
Led the entire league in three-point percentage, and it's not like he only takes one a game or something. It's at volume. So that's definitely helpful to help spread this court out.
It's perfect. It's exactly what you need. I think if you were to ask them, like, hey, you have to trade for a guy, and what do you want him to do? It's like, I want him to do that. I want him to do exactly what Grayson Allen is going to do. So I'm not faulting the contract. It's more of just like, oh, wow, I never thought he'd get that. It's It's great. Good for him, man. He made a bunch of shots. He was an incredible shooting this year. I hope he shows up a little bit more and they play a little bit better. But my opinion is like, now I'm expecting a lot more in him versus I was kind of like impressed that he made all these threes and now I'm not impressed anymore. It's like, you have to do this now. It's a completely different expectation.
I'd like to point out on the Minnesota side, dominant victory, but Karl Anthony Towns coming off of an injury has not had a ton of runway to get back up. 18 or 19 points, perfect from the line, and you know, 18. You know, that's not going to set any records. But this is a guy that has struggled in the playoffs to the point like there has been serious conversation saying, "Hey, should this guy be benched down the stretch?" So coming off the injury, having the issues in the past, it's just got to be just a relief for him for at least one game to just come in, put up the numbers, get the win, get out of there, and not have this whole, can Karl Anthony Towns play in the playoffs? Can he handle this?
We haven't played basketball on a team in quite some time, but I think we've both been on teams where you're fighting for playing position and playing time. And it's certainly a relief when you know like the guy coming in off the bench really isn't that good. But then when you're hurt for a little bit and he has to play a little bit more and he gets a little bit better and it's Naz Reid, it's just breathing down your neck the whole time. Like, I don't know, at some point this is going to become a weakness to them of having the two where they're just, like, they're battling each other more than they're battling the other team. And I don't know what you should do. I don't know what the solution is. I mean, ideally, you know, you have two good players and you have just who's ever feeling it that day. I don't think we should be shocked if we wake up tomorrow and there's a minutes restriction on Towns almost where Naz played a lot more. He had it tonight and we just – Cat didn't, and then the complete opposite the next game. They just have to be used to that, and that's not an easy thing to do, even as a professional. It's hard. It's not easy. And then you talked about the injury. That doesn't help either. Not being at 100%. I mean, there's plenty of guys out there that are probably not 100% right now. But tough one to have. I suppose it's a good problem to have. All right, let's move on to the Sunday game. I'll give you a little Celtics minute here. You want to talk about the first half or the second half? Because we're pretty good in the first, pretty questionable in the second. Goddamn Miami, I can't stand
this guy. What are you talking about? We came out of halftime, and we've had problems in the past of coming out of half without the energy. But it was really just the end of the third, end of the fourth. And you mentioned it earlier. I didn't actually really comment on it, but saying the announcers, and we were lucky enough or unlucky enough, depending on how you want to look at it, that we got the A squad, and we've dominated the entire game. We start off, what did we go up? We were up 9-0. Did we push it to 12-0? Jumped all over them. Then they made a little bit of run with their second team, and then we put it out. We were up 34 points. And then, we let our foot off the gas. And then I think there was three to four minutes left, and they got it to 14. And the way Doris Burke was talking, you would have thought that they were like a possession away. And this whole game was never in doubt. We both said, ahead, we were like, let's just not even entertain this. Let's like jump right all over them. And sure enough, Jaylen Brown, oh, I love that spin move for a dunk. And Drew Holiday just absolutely locked up Tyler Hero. Tyler Hero had a rough game. And we did exactly what we were supposed to do. It would have been nice to continue and have it be a complete 30-point, just really ride it out. But we're going against NBA teams. We're going against Miami. I was very happy that when they threw the zone at us, we didn't completely panic. I think it took us a little while to figure it out. But I was happy with the what happened. They tried to double team Tatum. Tatum said, "Cool." He had himself a triple double, and just a reminder that we've had our struggles. We had our struggles last year with Miami, but in Game 7, Tatum got hurt his ankle at the very beginning of the game. I think that game could have gone much differently, and most of the time, Tatum absolutely delivers in these games, and he did it again yesterday.
I'm not taking away anything from Boston. Boston played well, right? We were up 30 at one point. It was great. You need to say it's not a really big deal letting off the pedal and that we, blew a 34-point lead. They got it down to 14. I guess I'm more just saying Miami's patience and resiliency is just so hard to kill that they could have walked away that game. And I know a loss is a loss regardless of the score, but I think if they walked away with a 34-point loss, it would have been different than them getting it down to 14 and walking away being like, you know what? Things didn't go our way, but like we still have potential in this, and that there's some sort of confidence almost gained in that, in a moral victory that I didn't want to give them, because you give these guys a little bit and they just take everything. I was also just really impressed by Bam. I thought in a blowout, he still played really well. I thought he was so consistent and patient. He was the only guy that showed up.
I think we can continue to exploit that. That if, because I think we set the, or we tied the franchise record for threes made. And I think we're going to continue, and they're going to have to make an adjustment. And I'm sure Spoelstra will, that we're going to let Bam take as many mid-range shots as he wants, and we're just going to work the math. And we don't even have to make as many threes. We just have to make the equal amount, and we're going to be in good shape. And I just don't know what levers they're going to be able to pull on a consistent basis. You know, we take a lot of threes, and, you know, every once in a while you can get burned and have a, you know, a 10% three-point outing. But that's not going to happen a whole bunch of times. So I like the effort. I, you know, obviously, like I said, would prefer that we kept it at 30, but I think it was way overblown that we blew a 34-point lead to a 14-point lead. We didn't lose the lead. We never got to single digits. It was still a comfortable 14. It was still two possessions away from even getting to single digits. We course corrected, and it was a 20-point win on nice Sunday afternoon. I was really hoping after that the other games would be closer, but it was a bunch of fun to just have a, you know, especially after last year, to just absolutely just take it to a team the way we've been doing for the most of this year.
Outside of late last night, it really kind of was a bust of a day of basketball. I mean, I'm not saying I wasted my time watching it, but I'm looking back at all the scores and being like, man, I don't think we can read anything in any of these. I mean, the Clippers-Dallas game, 109-97. I mean, Dallas, I think I saw somebody yawn at halftime, be like, oh, that's right, there's a game on right now. We need to play. There's no Kawhi Leonard on the Clippers, and yet James Harden is playing like it's the regular season. Take that with whatever you want.
This game, Dallas made a run in the fourth, a la what we were just talking about with the Heat. This game was not a 12-point game. The Clippers were absolutely in control, and there was some push made at the end, but I never thought it was a real push. That seemed more like get your points, get your numbers kind of push.
I still have confidence in Dallas. This was not encouraging, and this isn't a bad Clippers team either. Every time I kind of favor Dallas, it's like, oh well, you know, they have Luka. It's like, yeah, the Clippers have players too. This isn't going to be a blowout. This is going to go a couple more games, but without Kawhi, and I thought defensively Dallas is just a little bit more improved, they would be able to do some stuff. But, you know, again, this is a team that has Kyrie and Luka, and, you know, pick on the rest of the supporting cast how much ever you want, but they only scored 97 points. that's not good.
Enough.
That's not great. This is a playoffs. You know, you're not playing Charlotte anymore. This is a real team. And with or without Kawhi, they're a quality playoff team, and you can't just mail in an effort like that. I just was shocked in the first half to have such a dud out of Dallas.
Dallas only scored 8 points in the second quarter. Eight.
I mean, Luka's had quarters where he's probably scored 30 points, and that's crazy.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, no one knows, but I think I'm leaning on, like, Kawhi's not coming back. This seems like if there was good news, the news would be out there. And after the game, I think it was Harden had mentioned, yeah, we knew for a few days that he wasn't going to play. So, well, that's not good. This wasn't all right, let's see how he's feeling this morning and see if he's playing this afternoon. This was days ahead of time. So that doesn't seem good for game two or three. I mean, maybe he comes back. But I think if you're Dallas, I mean, we saw this last year. We've seen this a bunch.
I don't think you could believe anybody.
Just because you get Harden this game, doesn't mean you're getting that from Harden next game. So you got to really hope that no Kawhi, no Harden, you get Luka and Kyrie to do their thing, and you could tie this thing up 1-1 real quick.
I'm going to take a wild assumption, but based on the history of Kawhi, for a teammate even as close as Harden and Kawhi may or may not be, he doesn't know anything about Kawhi's knee. He has no idea. Nobody does. I'm telling you, nobody does. Nobody does. So when Harden says something like, oh, I knew he wasn't going to play, like, I'm sure there was an assumption, and I'm sure there was a point of news where, if like, hey, if Kawhi's going to play, I'm sure Harden would have heard about it. He didn't hear about it, so he just is like, yeah, he's not coming. Like, there's no news here, but anything could happen. I'm not ruling anything out. I do think he's overly cautious, and he's going to continue to do that, and I would be interesting to see if they do go up in this series, if that encourages or discourages them, if they suddenly go down in the series. But nobody knows anything, and I don't think there's any reason to speculate anything at this point. That's just how Kawhi works. Even the own team doesn't know. He may play next game and score 40 points, and they'll be like, oh, I guess he's fine. Who knows?
It's so weird, because that would it wouldn't like blow me away. It's like, oh okay, yeah, well. Why would they give us accurate information on his knee? Or is it his knee? I don't even know what's wrong with him now. This has been going on for years.
Nobody's going to know anything. Again, there's no point in speculating it. It's a waste of time. Let's talk about somebody who actually had a great weekend. Is Dame time back? Dame playoff time? Are we here? We just on switch? All is forgiven? Is it all cured now? It was all worth it, right? This is exactly what Milwaukee wanted. They wanted Dame time, and they got it. First quarter, whole game, just tapping the wrist.
No, it wasn't the whole game. That might be the problem. Didn't he have 35 in the first half and then didn't score after that?
Yeah, basically.
He didn't need to play as much. I mean, the game was, once again, it was a blowout. But I don't mean to take away from it. I just kind of poke fun at you saying it was the whole day. No, he came off and it was just possession after possession, and they were deep threes. And I think if you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan, that's what you've been wanting, especially with Giannis being out. This has been the whole talk of, all right, yeah, during the game, you know, during the season, blah, blah, blah. But when the lights are bright and you really need them, this is what you're going to get. And this is what you weren't getting out of Jrue Holiday.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to make that argument. I think my bigger shock of this series is, I mean, we already picked on Indiana already. It's just terrible defense, bad offense. I don't know what they're good at. But I was more shocked that I thought this is one of the worst prepared Rick Carlisle teams I've ever seen. Like, I thought that was really uncharacteristic. I thought just Indiana would have been just a little bit more alert and a little bit more capable either. I mean, I know Dame was having a great game, but I don't know what stopped him from, like, guarding the back doors on Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez. Like, I don't know how those guys ended up having that game they had as well. But good for Dame.
The last game in this game, you know, you can look at what the score is at the end, but both teams were down by 20-plus points at the half. So, for sure, this is the modern NBA with threes. You know, no lead is safe. But if you're already down by 25 at the half, I mean, that's a miracle type of comeback that, like, really gets posted. That's a real surprise that you can't come in with that sort of effort in a playoff game. And like you said, that ill-prepared.
I don't know. I don't know what they were hoping to happen. It looked like they were shocked that Dame was going to shoot every time. Like they were, I mean, I know he was hot. I know he was scoring, but it just seemed like they didn't really have an idea of, like, all right, maybe we should double him, or maybe we should make him play defense on the other side. Like, I didn't see any adjustment. I just got smacked. I mean, there was a point in the first half where Dame was outscoring Indiana, like, late into the first half, like 2 minutes left in the first half.
The thing too is that it might not have been known exactly who was going to start in Giannis's place, and I was definitely surprised to see that Patrick Beverley was starting, and right afterwards, like, you know, this is probably going to be going to be an issue, but that seems like that's a prime guy that you can take advantage of, especially combined with Lillard, to force Lillard to have to play defense and, you know, sag off of Patrick Beverley to help play defense on Lillard. So I'm surprised they weren't able to take more advantage of that.
I thought Milwaukee would handle business in this series, and so far I feel good about that. But I just think there's a ton of adjustments that
you don't think they're going to handle it even without Giannis?
I think they can do it without Giannis, but I was just shocked Indiana didn't take advantage of some of the stuff I think they could take advantage of. I mean, you just mentioned all of that stuff. I think they can run on this team. I think they could play so much faster. Which you can
just the main thing being that they're former MVP, former Finals MVP, former champion Giannis is out, and we're not sure how long. It's like, if you want to win this, you have like an open opportunity, as well as playing at home. Milwaukee's the higher seed, but all these seeds were like decided on the last day. They're all like two games apart. These are basically coin flips, and so you have to take advantage of every opportunity. And it's not, oh, you lost a close one, you get them next time. It's, you got blown out, you didn't even score.
It was bad. All right, last game Sunday, you got anything else for OKC New Orleans, or did we already kind of talk about that in the opener here? I mean, it was the only good
just
game.
Like to mention, yeah, just want to mention, really unfortunate about Zion getting hurt. Had 40 points in that play-in game before. Just the it didn't even look like that bad of a landing. He knew immediately. I thought that Pelicans Lakers game, I thought that was going to be like a really fun finish down the stretch, and it kind of went like a little more of a whimper. Just really trying to figure out like what to do with Brandon Ingram. I feel like he has the skills, but it's almost like it has to be used in such a specific way that put in the wrong team, it like just doesn't, it almost makes it like worse. It's like hard to describe, but I know he struggled on the Olympic team, on the FIBA team last year, where it's like you got all these guys around you, but it almost seems like he just kind of like, I'm the guy, I take the shot, and like you have to take the tough shots. It's, well, yeah, you're the guy, you're the one that gets paid, but you only take the tough shots when like you really have to and there's no other options. If you have the easy ones, take the easy ones. There was a time down the stretch, the Pelicans took a shot way too early in the clock. They got the rebound, and then immediately Ingram went to like the right hand side and was like faced like perpendicular and pivoted around to take a tough contested three. And I think it was definitely under 5 minutes. I don't know, it may have been closer to like under two, where it's, this is crunch time. Like, this is where like everything has to be executed exactly right. And I just don't think they quite have it figured out. But yeah, it was mostly the Zion.
No, we could talk a little
bit
more.
Getting hurt again. And yeah, it just frustrating as a Zion fan.
Well, I've been hard on Zion, and it's always been like, all right, well, let's just see him play. And this year we did. He did play. All right, he played games.
Yep.
He was picked on a little bit early on. He'd be a little out of shape maybe, but then whatever. He still played. He's still in games. He was still healthy and active for the majority of the season. And he had an incredible play-in game against the Lakers. And one of the flaws he has and that he's got to fix, as well as a lot of the players on New Orleans, and specifically Ingram as well, is if they don't have the ball in their hands, they're useless. They're not good spot-up shooters. They don't catch and pass the ball ever. They're also awful passers. We were trying to do a post-up game for the New Orleans for a little bit there. Just nothing but turnovers all over the place. Just bad passing. I was most impressed by Zion because I don't think that they really have a good team around him for the way that he wants to operate. I mean, Zion has one move, right? He's overpowering. He's going to the left, and he's going to hang in the air. He doesn't really have a floater, and he's not really a threat off ball at all. So, like, there's a way you could figure this all out. For him to still get 40 points,
it's crazy.
With all the whole world knowing he's going left, he's going to shoot with his left hand, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. With all the miserable spacing around him, because nobody's a good shooter or a spot up for him on that team at all. And then as well as there's no guard play. Nobody's leading the offense. Nobody's running the offense. They constantly bring up Ingram and Zion. They bring the ball up, and I think that's almost a detriment to them because they are, one, running the offense, and then, two, being the offense in a lot of cases, which doesn't involve anybody. So there's a disaster of a mess here. I think I was hard on Zion enough of like being, I can't believe you're going to invest in him. He'll never play in enough games. But now I've almost flip-flopped to the point where we need to put the right guys around this guy to let him operate and to see how high the ceiling can go. It is a very specific tool, as you mentioned. It's the same thing with Ingram, where it only works this way. You can't use it any other way. It is a unitask, all right? This thing cannot be used in multiple ways to be successful. It is one-dimensional, but the dimension is still an incredible ceiling, of which he has 40 points going into the end of that, tied at the Lakers. 3 minutes to go. Who knows where that ends? I mean, just hypothetically, maybe he wins an overtime with a 50-point game, and we're looking at this completely different. Like, that is a very big wake-up call for a lot of other people, a ceiling that I think we expected out of him and just haven't gotten. And as much as I want to be hard on him and be like, he doesn't play, you know, overshape and all this stuff, there's still a little bit of magic there. And we saw it that night, and I just feel for him because there's clearly something there.
He knew immediately. Where he went to the bench and then had to go off, and you could just tell the frustration.
It's tough business, and I hope he gets healthy, and I hope we're able to figure out a way to get him there. I mean, Embiid has had so many injuries back to back. I mean, it's been knees. I know it starts off the career a little rocky, but there's also like weird freak accidents. You know, like an orbital bone fracture. Embiid broke his face 1 year, and then I think he broke his hand another year. It's like these things just happen. They could happen to anybody. And to happen, like, at the timing of this.
Freak accidents,
And it is a physical game. You are at risk of getting hurt. And when you play harder against guys that are also playing harder in a playoff matchup, you're almost more likely to get hurt. So it's just hard. And if I'm New Orleans, I don't know what value Brandon Ingram has, but I think that era of these two playing together is over because they just don't complement each other enough. And I don't want to, like, talk too down on one and say that they'll never be anything, but I just don't think they're ever going to be anything together, and I'm ready to put that in writing now. Like, that's I think that's done. I don't know if there's anything else to flesh out here, try out here. I don't know if the addition of another point guard would make any addition. I just think these two don't mix together. They're both trying to do the same thing, and no one else is benefiting it from around them, and that's just a rough way to start the year, especially with the I was joking when he goes out the last 2 minutes. I was like, is this like a new drastic tanking thing so that they can get OKC in the first round? Because they did get a better matchup with OKC. If Zion's playing, I mean, even last night's game, it was a 2-point game alone. Imagine if Zion was in that game. Like how are we feeling today? Like, are we feeling a little shaky for OKC and there's this Zion magic on the other side? This would be a completely different series.
I think the Pelicans are in trouble.
Yeah.
I think this was their chance to really put OKC on their heels. I think OKC was coming in, unsure of the playoffs with a lot of guys. This is their first experience. I mean, Chet's a rookie, you know, out there and playing in crunch time. So that's just an adjustment that you have to make. But you're going in, no Zion. You think, all right, we might be able to let off the gas a little bit. But I think this was their opportunity. And I think OKC, now that they got one playoff game under their belt, is only going to get more confident. They're by far the better team with the Pelicans not having Zion. And I think this one could be in sweep territory.
All right, we got more games coming up all week. That's kind of all we're going to get caught up for today. We have a couple other side NBA stories to talk about. Some fun, some not so fun. Let's start with the, I guess, unfortunate one. The Allen Iverson statue in Philadelphia has been revealed. And I know he's – I don't know if it's in relation to him just being a undersized player that the undersized statue feels so drastic. I mean, he's very miniature in this statue. I guess in my mind I just assumed it was a lifelike statue like every other Jordan statue and stuff. But leave it to Philly to screw up a statue. I mean, they have a statue of Rocky, a fictional character boxer.
American.
A fictional boxer when they have real Philadelphia born and bred boxers there with tons of success. And it's fine. I thought this was a weird story. Do you think there's any hope of this being corrected, or this is what it is? Like, if we just move on?
So this turned out to be something that was, we are not from Philly, so we don't understand. So this comes out on Twitter. AI is getting a statue. It's getting unveiled. It's like, that's awesome. That makes perfect sense. You know, one of the most famous Philly athletes. Seems like almost like it's overdue. And so, all right, well, yeah. All right, oh, no, let's see the unveiling. And then is this a toy? Like, Allen Iverson is right there, and it's smaller than Iverson, and Iverson's not a very big person. And I was like, this is embarrassing. Like, how do you do this? Did you run out of copper or whatever you make it out of? But
it's like solidified Happy Meal, man. It's like
yeah, it was over the next day, word gets out from Philly as everyone is just the same sort of response of like, what is this? Like, it a statue. A statue is supposed to be the same size or bigger than the person, not smaller. Like, that's a model. That's different than a statue. Turns out the statues outside of the Sixers practice facility are all that size. They're all small. There's a Charles Barkley one that they debuted in 2019. I guess no one remembers. I don't remember. That is also small. They're all small. I guess there's ones that are by the stadium that are the normal size for statues. But boy, did no one know that, including me, including you. So I don't know why they're smaller at the practice facility, but this was not an Allen Iverson specific. He was small. This is just something that they do in Philly. I still think it's weird, but yeah, just to get that information out to people that may have missed it, that the Sixers have decided or decided a long time ago that their practice facility has tiny little small statues.
Well, while we're showing our appreciation to NBA veterans here, we've had an NBA player be banned for life. Jontay Porter has been banned for life from the NBA after his gambling. I mean, I don't know what else to say. The stupid gambling too, like not even it's like you're just giving gamblers a bad name. I think the association with this is like this guy was just, this was a silly mistake. I agree with the consequence to it. It's just ridiculous that I even thought he would get away with it at this point. I mean, the more details that come out, the more ridiculous it sounds. The budget on this, the specific bets that, you know, skyrocketed on certain days are just astronomically inexplainably dumb. Right? Like, is that it? I mean, what else we got here? Just done for life.
Yeah. He's banned for life. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I said he's getting banned for life. There could be no wiggle room on this. This wasn't even just he was gambling. Even in the NFL, guys have gotten some significant suspensions just for gambling on NFL property. Even if it's on other sports, just to say this is separate. You cannot be doing this on work time. Like, this has to be completely separate. They probably would prefer they didn't do it at all. But yeah, he gambled. He didn't gamble. He personally didn't gamble on any games he played in, but he did gamble on basketball games. He gambled on his own team while they were playing. It was only about 13 games. He gambled on other sports, and it's all legal. So that part is fine. It's the real issue was he let people know that he was going to basically take a dive. Said, hey, bet on my unders. I'm going to go in the game. And he did it twice. One, he went out because he said he was sick. And another time he went out, said he had something, a problem, re-injury of his eye, which both seem generally plausible. Like, okay, you know, that happens. He doesn't get a lot of playing time to begin with. So you figure, hey, why would you lie? You're hoping to get this next contract to keep making millions playing basketball. But he told these people, and it wasn't, hey, we'll put a little bit of money on this and we'll try to get away with it. The guy bet $80,000 on a Jontay Porter, who even NBA guys couldn't name him or name probably what team he plays for. This is for sure what he's going to be best well known for, or infamously known for, but probably well better known that he's Michael Porter Jr.'s brother. So not great for him. I'm sure he's getting questions in Denver and not the best. But yeah, you put $80,000 on a prop, that is going to gain some attention. And yeah, it was flagged and they looked into it and then it happened again. And that all of the sports right now, as they're getting more and more of the gambling money, they can't have this. They can't. It has to be all above board. And I called this happening. I didn't see any other way around it.
It's just stupid. I mean, it's almost like I wish I could have told him how he could have gotten away with it. Because there's a million things he could have done just smarter about all this. It's whatever. All right. Happier NBA news. Clippers getting a new arena. More and more details are coming out about the backdrop, I'll call it. The seats behind the basket that are going to be reserved specifically for Clippers fans, and there's a bit of a deal with the tickets here. It's, I believe, first come, first serve, right? What else we got with this?
So the backdrop is called The Wall, so it's already been debuted that they're going to have – it's going to be steep, and the whole idea is it's supposed to bounce the sound off. It's supposed to be a competitive advantage, and that was the start. And like you said, we're getting more word on what's coming out. So recently it came out that there you'd be able to buy the Ultimate Wall Pass. So it's season tickets. So all right, I think it's season tickets in LA. It's like, well, I mean, I don't know how much a Laker season ticket costs, but this has got to be really expensive. Comes out to this is before fees, but $1,200. And so that's 41 games. So you're looking at just over $30 for a ticket to an NBA game. And especially the Clippers, they've got all-stars. That seems very reasonably priced. But here is the real wrinkle is once you get your Ultimate Wall Pass, these seats are just like the student section at a college game. Whoever is first in line, you get the best seat in the section. And it starts at row 3. And then it gets filled in. So you really have to want to go see this game. And I think they're really hoping that this aligns with you're going to have the biggest Clippers fans sitting in these sections at NBA games. This is the Los Angeles Clippers we're talking about here. This is not a college team. NBA.
Well, aren't you always talking about how we love the college crowds and, this isn't quite storming the court, but it's definitely a step closer of grouping together the guys that are going to be the noisiest, the loudest, the rowdiest, the most fan-spirited all together in the same section utilized as well as, I mean, I'm not going to, downplay courtside, but I think I'd rather sit behind the basket personally. I think you get a better view at the game. You can see the flow a little bit more, but that's just me, and I think you're getting a pretty good seat and a pretty good deal around a lot of fun people. I mean, going to a game, it could be a different experience depending on where you're going and how important the game is, but this seems like you're just joining a tailgate with a bunch of familiar faces that are all motivated with the same inspiration of tearing down whatever the road team's going to be here. I mean, wait till the Lakers come see this thing. That's going to be the fun one. It's the second the Lakers come visit all this. I'll be excited for that.
I think this is a awesome thing to try. I hope that it works out. I'm not all the way sure, just only because I've only had the experience of NBA games and lucky enough to be a Celtics fan. So when I've been to a playoff game, like, they take it real seriously. The team's been good most of the time, where some of these other teams, you're just struggling. You're struggling to get fans to come in. We're knowing that this team is going to be good, knowing you're going to be able to get fans, and how can you improve the experience? It gets easier. I don't know if it gets – it's both. It gets easier and easier and more convenient to stay home, and harder and more inconvenient to go to these games. You got to pay for parking. You got to get there. The tickets are getting more and more expensive. Where it's just at home, you have a big screen TV. You got your man cave. You got your sound all set up. You got ice cold beer in the fridge. You got food right there. So to go out, there has to be a reason that's bringing you out there. And I feel like we see over and over again, and I get it, it's a business. It's a maximization of how much money can we get out of these fans rather than how can we maximize the experience of these fans. I know the Warriors, they moved out of their old arena in Oakland into San Francisco. And one of the things from a maximizing business is they built suites closer down to the court, so you can get to your courtside seats, and then if you want to go back to your suite to be away from the people, it was very easy. You didn't have to interact with anybody else. So you're getting the uber rich Silicon Valley fans that are there, and I think that it's a different type of fan than I think what the Clippers are going to have to their game. That is not a when are you showing up? The joke with the Heat is that the fans don't really show up until midway through the first quarter. But if you have fans that are showing up, I don't even know how early you're going to show up. But what if they have like that wall is filled game one while teams are warming up? I think that's going to be very cool, and I think that it could really push for other teams to say, hey, maybe this should be more about maximizing the fans' experience and less about just trying to make more money.
It's a win. It's a win for us. We don't get a lot of them. Consumers doing whatever they can. It's a different approach. I like it. All right, let's talk Olympic team basketball. What do we got? We got an official roster now.
We got
locked in.
We got the roster.
Who's in? Who's out?
I believe, I think for the Olympic team, we have one spot still available. We're still trying to decide, but as of right now, I'll read off the list. It's a very well known list. We have LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Joel Embiid, Devin Booker, Jason Tatum, Anthony Davis, Tyrese Halliburton, Anthony Edwards, Drew Holiday, Bam Adebayo, and Kawhi Leonard. So that is two Celtics. It's going to be Steph Curry's first time. It is going to be first time for Joel Embiid as an American. I thought that was pretty cool that he decided to be an American so he could come play with us. Well, what do you think about the roster?
I mean, we're good. We're good. I'd add Derek White, but you know that's me. I just think that it's hard to find role players on a team.
Talk
like
about
this.
The reverse of the Brandon Ingram Zion, where it's like, hey, they're really good, but you kind of have to have the certain thing. I feel like Derek White, you could throw him on any basketball team anywhere, and he'd be able to make himself work. Whether he needs to be like the primary scorer, or he needed to be in this situation, you know, he need to be the 12th man.
Well, also, his ego isn't going to be damaged when they're like, hey, man, you're going to sit in the corner and you're going to cut and you're going to play defense. You know, if you tell the wrong player that.
And block shots
more than anyone else, any other guard. Yeah, I got that one. Someone told me that on the podcast one time. It's not easy to find guys who are willing to do that. And I think there's a wake-up call, hopefully, when you get there of like, oh, wait a minute. You know, Steph's on this team. You know, LeBron's on this team. Like, there's egos that you almost bow down to. That's fine, but I think there's only so many you're willing to bow down to, and so many you're willing to, you know, change your game for. And I'm not saying this team isn't capable of doing that, but if I were to add more pieces, I would add guys like that. I wouldn't be looking for the most talented guys. And sorry, that's insulting to whoever's going to get the axe of all this, but I also already, you know, I saw Kawhi was the last guy in. I don't know if it was a commitment from us or from him, but he's not even playing right now, and the idea of him being relied on for a roster spot seems even shakier. And the Clippers, I feel like, are going to do everything in their power to find a way to get Kawhi to not play in this, right? Like, that seems, I don't know what control they have of it, but that's what I would be doing.
That was a concern when I was looking at it of injury, where Embiid already had to go to the locker room last game, and he's on here. Anthony Davis, perennial, going to the floor, has to go to the locker room, and Kawhi currently not playing. So it just seems like if you're not even able to play in the playoffs, are you going to be ready for the Olympics? But this is the roster for right now. So I think things could always change. You know, if someone can't play, I think there's still plenty of time to replace them. You were talking about you'd want to, you know, certain guys that you'd want to replace them. Have you thought about maybe replace the last spot, you know, maybe not even being a professional? What if that was a college player? What do you think about that?
Stop. Well, there's definitely a chance that would be a player I would hope he wouldn't come in thinking like, all right, I'm getting 25 shots today. It would be more of like, all right, I just want to be on this team, learn what I learned. And, you want me to block shots and play defense? All right, I'm going to block shots and play defense. I'm not ruling it out. And I do think on the dream team, it's the value of having Leitner on that team, I think, was good. I think it made sense. I think it showed a little bit more growth and advertised college basketball as well. But Cooper's not going back, like, if he plays. Like, he's a one and done. So,
well, let me just point out, the Olympics is this summer. So this would be before he even played a college game. So this was something that came across my news feed, and I had to ask you. It's like, this isn't getting traction anywhere else, right? Yeah, that someone had thrown out that they thought that the last roster spot should be for Cooper Flagg, who is the number one recruit going to Duke this year. As of right now, is projected to be the number one draft pick next year. Supposed to be really good. Played in the Nike Summit last night. I've seen him. I saw him play in the McDonald's All-American. That game it's a little tough. You have a lot of all-stars. So, you know, different guys are going for different things. It's definitely not necessarily the most, hey, how are guys going to look at the next level? But yeah, I was pretty surprised by that. Especially if I was looking to put another Duke guy on this list, I think I'd want Ben Caro. He was on the FIBA team last year before going to Cooper Flagg. But I guess there was the argument, and it almost seems like an April Fool's kind of argument of saying like, oh, well, you know, a lot of, you know, more international players. If we're getting an American that's the number one pick, we're gonna want to, you know, be pushing towards, you know, all the media and all the success. But it's like, hey, we have other Americans, yeah, you know, that we can still do this for.
I'm not wishing ill on anybody, but I imagine Cooper Flagg's got a lot of games left in him. All right, we don't need anything from today. But, you know, in a couple years from now, four more years from now, I'm hoping he's going to get the call on the list and that he's a qualified guy to go. It's a good problem to have that we have a ton of guys that are qualified to go. And it's a good scenario this year where a lot of guys were volunteering to go. I was a little concerned that
that's what I really like about the list. Where, like, with the FIBA team and some of the other teams, we've gone with an A team, but maybe not quite like the A plus team. And for sure, LeBron, Durant, Curry are on the older side, but that those guys are interested, I think, is really important just going forward to make sure that the next guys are still interested and that we don't end up with a all-star game situation where just nobody cares about it. So that's, you know, very excited about the playoffs, but it's kind of cool knowing that even once the playoff ends, we got a little bit of basketball to look forward to before football.
Yeah, you know, WNBA, Olympic basketball, and a little bit of baseball here.
Oh yeah, Caitlin Clark got the number one pick. Wasn't a surprise at all, but actually, you know, definitely happened. There was a weird media situation afterwards, but I think there's going to be more weird things that are happening as we go forward.
I think everyone was so excited to hype up the draft, and I think I joked before the draft. It was like, hey, a couple of these players are going to get drafted and play on the same team. And that happened with Cardoza mm-hmm. and Reese now are going to be on the same team. I don't think anyone's ever going to get a rebound between that team right there. That's some toughness being
that's
battled
gonna
out there.
Old school basketball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know there's going to be some bruising, and it ain't going to be on them. It's going to be from them.
I don't think either of them take many 3-point shots.
No, well, you know, we'll find someone else to do that. The rest of it they'll have covered, so that'll be interesting. Let's wrap everything up real quick here with just take your temperature on the NFL draft, where it's going to happen on Thursday. The Patriots have the third pick, of which we are more than open for business. I've never heard a team be so open for business to try to trade this pick. It's the most advertising we ever put into the budget of the Patriots either. It's just, hey, we're open for business. Anyone trade? I don't even know what we're asking for. I don't know what we want. We're just open for business. It's a madness I can't contain right now. I'm so nervous. It's to the point where I don't even know what result's going to happen. I'm just so mad of the way everything's been handled already. They can't even please me with whatever happens. I'm already on edge.
Do we even have a general manager yet?
I don't know who's in charge. No, I don't know. Who's
that seems like a problem.
Who's the guy that's going to hand the envelope to the guy that says, all right, this is who we're taking? Is that got an intern? Who's that? I have no idea.
I don't know. I feel like I should know at this point because the draft is less than a week away. And when I first saw those comments, I thought, oh, this is the new general manager. I must have missed that at some point. But I think he's just an executive, so maybe he is the one right now. I don't know if maybe we're going to go with, like, how basketball, like, there might not be, like, a general manager. Sometimes it's, you know, basketball operations. Like, there's all different titles for different people. Maybe we're going a unique route, but would really like to know who's the main guy in charge and actually going to be making this pick. But dude, that quote was such a word salad. It went like all different directions and basically said, like, we're open to everything and nothing at the same time. And maybe we'll trade the pick, but maybe we won't if people are going to offer us. I didn't like it. It seems very anti-Patriots. It seems like something that a team, you know, I'm just going to pick on the Chicago, who have had their struggles. And they think that they're being all clever and smoke screens, and it's just so obvious. It's like, do you guys know what you're doing? Or are you, like, asking us for suggestions here? So I'm trying not to get too bogged down on it. Celtics got a big win yesterday. Playoffs are here for that. I can't get too worked up about football and the possibilities. And even whatever we do on trade night, it doesn't change anything right now. We won't know for 4 months, probably at the earliest. We're not going to know. You know, if we trade, say we trade up and we get, you know, Caleb. You're not gonna know. You're not gonna know, and so I can't get all worked up about it.
The more I see, I mean, you picked on the Bears, and sure, I mean, they guessed wrong. The Trubisky thing is a disaster. They've traded up in the draft more than once and just didn't get the right guy any of the times. So, like, I understand the fear of all of that, but I will give them compliments on what they've prepared and the team that they've set up for Caleb Williams to walk into. And as much as I do want to lock in a quarterback this year, and I feel like that's the only chance we have of really turning the franchise around is reaching for a home run at a quarterback position and just hitting it, and that's going to be the on switch for us. I am worried that even if we do get the right guy at quarterback, that this team he's going to be walking into is not ready for him. It is not going to protect him. It is not going to make his life easier. It is not going to make him look good, even if he is good. So trading back does help me a little bit understand that maybe we're going to be bad this year regardless, and that we could try to bench a guy and try to play Brissett the whole year, but I'm already under the impression that if we do that, Brissett's going to get knocked out by week eight, and then we're going to have the pressure on, all right, are we doing this or are we not doing this? You know, I don't know what the right answer is. I just think we're in a really bad position where we didn't spend any money and we're so reliant on the draft, and it doesn't even seem like we're trying to get better for this year, and I don't know what the big picture is anymore because who are we building around? We're building, but like we don't even have a guy to build around. So we got to buy the draft the guy to build around and then start buying some free agents every offseason here. We did nothing to improve this team in the offseason. We have more cap space than anyone else. We have so much money to spend and so many holes to fill and not enough draft picks to do it. And then the more I'm just on a tangent of all of this. The more crap stories come out just trashing Belichick, the more that I'm like unattracted to the Patriots and really being turned off of being like, wait a minute, I was unsupportive of this guy for this team for all these years, and this is how they're going to act now. I mean,
it's like, man, read the room. We get you're the owner, but there's a reason that you really only see the owner like right when you win the Super Bowl, but you see the coach and you see the players every week, multiple times a week. And it just seems like it's just such a weird credit like
He's a
grab that's going
billionaire.
on it.
He's
And it just
insanely
seems so weird.
successful. He has so
And
much money.
I think before all of this, it would have all been like all kind of, together. It's like Brady was the quarterback, Belichick was the coach, and Kraft was the owner. And I don't think that, at least on the outside, really cared exactly what was the amount. I think everyone probably liked Tom Brady the most, Belichick, and then Kraft in that order, just because that's just how sports works. And yeah, just more and more as it comes out, it's just getting uglier and uglier. It's just like, how do you keep stepping on yourself throughout all of this? Like, how are we turning this awesome, like greatest, most successful era and like making it worse? Like, how are we looking back and be like looking at it worse than, this PR campaign is going terribly.
Look, we can keep going. The idea that they sabotaged his Atlanta coaching job, Belichick's chance to coach the Atlanta Falcons this year, and that it ended up costing the Patriots $25 million, because if he got the job over there, Atlanta would have whatever split the salary that they were willing to pay him, and that they sabotaged his job, and now it ended up costing us the entire 25 because he isn't getting a contract from anyone else. I didn't think that made sense. That was really petty, that it's like we're trying to nickel and dime and save money everywhere else, but we're willing to not save that money, as if that's anything. Like we're intimidated by Atlanta. Like we don't want Belichick to go get another job because of blank. I don't see why that was only a disadvantage to us to discourage him of getting the job in Atlanta. It could have only benefited us, even if we were screwing over Atlanta, even if it was true, which I don't believe it. I refuse to believe it. I'm sure he's
That
challenging.
seems so bizarre.
I also think that we have been like the business professional quiet team for so long, and then now that the era is over, Kraft is like, well, now I want to open my mouth as much as possible. And it's like, you're not even a player. We just spent a whole lifetime of an era of everybody, the team first, the Patriot way, all of this. Nothing that has come out this offseason tells Kraft anything about the Patriot way. It's complete opposite. He's been selfish. He's been greedy. He's been attention hog for nothing. Of a guy that has everything in the world already, I can't believe he's still reaching for all of this, just trying to put Belichick down. It's so petty. It's really hard
Doesn't
to be
make any
supportive.
sense.
It's impossibly supportive at this point. And the fact that we're gonna suck and stink the whole year, mixed with all this, it's like we're going to lose a million Patriot fans this year.
He's going to get booed at Brady's jersey retirement.
I hope it gets bad enough to the point where Kraft stops showing up to the game.
I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be. I don't think he's going to be expecting it, because why would he ever get booed before? But I think this summer with the documentary and then the trying to spin the documentary and trying to do the PR spin off of that with no other good news, and then you have Brady coming in, and I mean Brady won a Super Bowl with another team, but when he comes back, I mean, when he came back last year, just. He is not going to get booed, but I think if there's not full-on boos, there's at least going to be rumbles.
I don't like it. I don't like where we're going. I'm terrified on Thursday of – like, there's the chance – I'm just praying that, you know, the other teams make mistakes and that, like, the Mahomes pick just drops to us. Like, I know it's not our choice. It's whoever's going to be available there, but what if that's the guy? Like, what if the guy's just there at three? Like, I'm just – that scenario's happened. It's not a lock to happen. Anything can happen, but I just think that that's our best case scenario of just hoping that we get the guy at three and that, I mean, just lucky. You know, we do all this analysis and nobody's ever perfect on it all. It's never, clear number one pick. Can't go wrong. Wow.
I think it's only fair that we get Brady for two decades and now we've gone almost a decade without Brady. And I think we should get another two decades of a generational. Probably better than Mahomes level quarterback. I think that's only fair.
Well, we went two decades without spending any money. Brady had to take pay cuts, and now we have the worst facilities, the worst treatment of family, the worst spent dollar in all of the NFL. And our coach and our owner is out there taking credit for the past 20 years. You know, it's just like, what a fucking joke. I'm so sick of him. And maybe the media wants me to do this, and I'm just being manipulated into it. But like the stories.
It doesn't seem like it's one story, because that's where, at the beginning it was like, all right, no, we're all going to stick together, but now it just seems like it keeps happening. Like, there's too much smoke at this time for there not to be a fire going on.
All right, you got a minute to get out of here. You got anything you want to add to this? Anything for the people out there?
Yes, the voice of the Yankees on the radio, John Sterling, surprise retirement earlier last week, which I can only imagine has something health related, and it's unfortunate. You know, we just had Mike Gorman retire very much on his own terms, and
I had the PGA guy retired too, right? I'm blanking, the Masters guy.
Was it Vern
yeah,
Lundquist?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I quite realized that he retired because he did football as well, and so he had retired from football a couple, and just. I think Sterling had done the Yankees radio, I think it might have been for 40-something years. So, you know, in the same ballpark, you know, as Mike Gorman of, I don't remember anybody else doing the Yankees radio besides John. And it's just going to be weird listening to the radio without him being there. Like, you know, never miss games. And just, you know, definitely a little bit concerned, because if it was a known health issue, you would think would have wrapped it up last year, where this has been all happening very fast. Of news came out, he's retiring, they did a little a little ceremony, and just like this is over, and no ease on out. So yeah, just wanted to kind of give a shout out there, and just hopefully it's not nearly as serious as it really seems like it is.
Well, definitely an end of an era. This is definitely like one of those things where I feel like I've aged to the point where I'd be like, yeah, no, my era is better than every other era. These sort of things are really part of it. And that's how you know you're getting old. But we'll be back next week. Thank you, as always, for listening. Subscribe, Little Column A, Little Column B, Facebook, Twitter, wherever else you get your podcasts. We'll be back.
Little Column A, Little Column B.